Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the earnings call of IRIS Business Services Limited for the quarter and year-ended 31st March 2024. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. We have Mr. S. Swaminathan, CEO, Mr. K. Balachandran, CFO, Ms. Deepta Rangarajan, Whole-Time Director, Mr. P. K. X. Thomas, CTO of the company. I now hand the conference over to Mr. S. Swaminathan. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Just a word of caution before we start. I'm actually at an airport, and if occasionally I go on questions because announcements are being made at the airport. I think it's been an extraordinarily good year, thanks to the South African contract that we won last year. And from where we were about 6-7 years ago to come to this stage where we have just crossed 100 crore revenue, I think it's a big deal. And I'm grateful to all of our colleagues for making this happen. And as I said, I think the nature of performance will keep changing from time to time. This whole year has actually been driven by the first business, which is the collect business of the company. As you know, the business has three parts: collect, create, and consume. Collect, helping regulators, create with enterprises, and consume the data analytics part. The collect business is the one that actually drove performance this year. Though increasingly our focus is on create, we're also trying to take the create business away from mandate-led opportunities to other areas, which we will see going forward. But I think the momentum that we have, the tailwind that we have, and the cash that we have in the bank, going forward, you will see we have a stake of cash in the bank. All this gives us the confidence that we should be able to mount a reasonable attempt at capturing more market share. How we translate into revenues going forward is something that only time will tell. But I think before I get on to anything of that sort, I'll let Balu take you through. I think the presentation has already been uploaded. I'll let Balu take you through the broad numbers before we get to the things. Over to you, Balu. I think we also have Servo on the call, who is a recent sales hire. He comes with a significant amount of experience on the SaaS sales front. So he's also available if you want to pose any questions to him. We also probably have Anu, who's been working on taking carbon beyond the mandate. And we also have several other colleagues joining the call who we can always turn to for questions if you have specific questions on specific areas. But we'll start with Balu. Balu, over to you.
Thank you very much, Swaminathan. I hope all of you can hear me. Good evening, and it's great to see a nice turnout for this conference call. It's also good to meet with all of you after a gap of 6 odd months. So as usual, I'll quickly run through some of the highlights of our financial performance for the year ended March 2024. I hope some of you have seen our investor presentation, which we uploaded on the exchange websites a few hours ago. Coming to financial performance for the last quarter, you will see that we have pretty much carried the momentum that we have shown in the previous quarters. Just that we have done a wee bit better this quarter. The top line growth is a tad more compared to the previous quarters, while at the PBT level we have done a bit better as well. However, we continue to maintain that it is best to look at our company's growth trajectory from a 12-month perspective. For the full year, we have grown at about 37%, while the EBITDA increased by 45%. At the same time, the profit before tax nearly doubled. Taking a quick look at the expenses, you would see that costs have nearly kept pace, little less with the top line, given our need to spend on growing the business, especially on the create side. So that continues. And as expected, and as Swaminathan mentioned, this year's performance has been boosted by a stellar turnout from the collect segment, which grew as much as 70%. On the other hand, the create segment growth was more sedate, though in terms of number of customer additions, I would say it is quite decent as well. Now let me just go through a couple of interesting financial indicators. I'm happy to report our return on net worth, the key ROE, has moved up substantially to 21% from the previous year's 14%. But if I look at the number from a return on average net worth, we do it at the end of the March balance sheet figure. But if I look at from an average point of view, this will be even better. So that is something which is quite gratifying, especially to me, given the fact that we need to use our capital in a very wise manner. The other thing I would like to highlight is that we have done quite reasonably well on our collection process. Collection efficiencies have improved, with the result that receivables as days of sales have reduced to about 80 days, which has also helped our working capital management as well. And before I wind up, I also want to mention that our net operating cash flow for the full year is now close to 12 crores and more than doubled from the previous year's numbers, which is again quite gratifying. Having said that, that is still a modest number. We need to make sure that we do much better going forward. The balance sheet cash position also has improved, which Swami also mentioned, giving us that extra room in spending so that we can scale our SaaS business in a much more meaningful manner. So that is all from my side at this point of time, and we can perhaps open the session for Q&A. Swami, over to you.
I think before we get to Q&A, Deepta, you have any opening remarks to make? Deepta, you're not audible.
You are able to hear me?
Much better, but not significantly so. I think you need to speak into the mic. Whatever mic you have.
Okay. No specific remarks for me. I'll take anything for Q&A that comes in. Okay.
Thomas, do you have any comments to make?
No, Mr. Thomas. Actually, there is nothing from my side. If there is any questions, I'll definitely have to take it.
Okay. So, the moderator for any questions that may want to come up.
Thank you so much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Again, if you have a question, please press star and 1. The first question is from the line of Mitesh Mehta from Investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please
go ahead. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Congratulations, first of all, for a great set of numbers. My first question is related to marketing plan for Collect business. Like, how do we plan to expand the business and geographical reach for this business? Because I feel that is that holds a very good potential.
So every segment that we have has significant potential. The nature of marketing in the Collect business is very different from the nature of marketing in the CH or the other businesses. The Collect business is largely driven by RFPs, where regulators issue RFPs on which we bid, and then we thereafter win some, we lose some. So the way we approach this segment is by getting in front of as many regulators as possible and telling them that we are potentially a good partner for them to work with if they are looking to implement a regulatory filing platform. And that's what we do. So I hope that answers the question. Do you want to add this?
Okay. My second question is regarding, is there any further plan in company to bifurcate the business or split the business into two, especially to generate more capital for further expansion?
There are always discussions that happen within the company about subdividing the company into various parts, including collect, create, and consume. These are discussions that happen at the board every single level. And if and when anything comes to fruition, our shareholders will be the first to know.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
We always have academic discussions keep happening all the time. You know, okay. Our board is very active board, and we keep getting asked questions about these plans. So as I said, I mean, once someday the board basically says yes, we need to do it, I think we'll go ahead and do it.
Okay. Okay, that's it from my side. If I have any questions, I'll get into
it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Potti, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. And first, congratulations to the entire team. I mean, 100 crore is a great milestone, and it was definitely a hard one. So very happy for all of you guys, and congratulations. My first question is on Collect. South Africa mandate drove majority of the growth this year. So what proportion of the contract is done and how much more of the order book is left there is one question. And the pipeline in Collect, I mean, what after South Africa is the other question.
Bali, you want to take that?
Yeah, I can do that. While we don't want to give out precise numbers, I would broadly say that the South African contract, you could say perhaps, about 30-35% is already, done at this point of time, the current contract shape. Of course, you can expand it as we go along. So that's one number that you can keep in mind. And outside that, say that, what I've seen in the last few months, the Collect pipeline is looking more and more interesting. More and more, inquiries getting floated in the market. We are responding as well. It takes time for, the whole process to, come to fruition and award gets, announced. But I would say that, the pipeline is certainly looking interesting, and we don't see much of a problem in terms of not being able to substitute whatever we accrue on the execution of the South African project. That's what I would say at this point of time.
So basically, what Balu is saying is that I'll continue to get salaries going forward.
I'm just curious, is any tenders, not just up for bid, but any tender results are to be out this year where we can announce any deal wins like we did in the past with Bhutan and others?
We are hoping that we would be able to make a few announcements over the course of the next few months. Having said that, we can only do that if, certain paperwork, etc. gets completed and we are confident that, this is something where we can meet the requirements, conditions which are required before announcement. Having said that, I wouldn't be surprised that, before we meet again, there would be some announcements.
Oh, thank you. I mean, yeah, that's what I was looking for. I mean, so some tender results are going to be coming out, so that's good to hear. Even if we win or not. So the other question is on Create. It was very heartening to see. Despite no new mandates coming out globally, we still had a 20-odd% growth, which indicates that we are winning market share with the sales and marketing team that we have right now. So in that context, it will be great to hear more from the management. You have had a new hire also in a chief sales officer, which is satisfying to see as well. We added a product officer and now a sales officer. So it's great to see. So it would be great to hear more on your strategy for winning, converting more customers to Carbon going forward. Because on one hand, we understand the product is sticky, so the conversion is difficult. So how do we intend to do that with the absence of new mandates going forward?
So there was one very interesting development this year, which actually surprised all of us. One of our former partners came back to us because they discovered that their current product does not meet the requirements in Europe like ours does. I think Deepta or Anu can tell you more about it. Deepta, Anu, one of you can actually take it forward because you know more about it than I do.
Yes, sure. Hi, this is Anuradha. So we've been working closely with partners in Europe. In fact, one of the early partners that we had signed up, of course, initially they weren't giving us good business, but I think over the course of years, I think they are trying to go global. They are looking for a partner who is able to overall cover and cater to global customer base, which is where Carbon perfectly sits in. It has been positioned as one platform for multiple geo-reporting, multiple regulatory reporting, and of course, now of course we have mandate which is upcoming as well. So it is very, very interesting to see how partners from the past are also reconnecting back with us with possible newer opportunities. So however, it's at a very early stage, it's a very early stage conversation. We need to see how this stands out. Thank you.
Anu, Aditya, you want to take it forward? I have a question for you and Aditya, can you talk about it, please?
One more time, sorry.
Can you talk about Fluence? Can you talk about Fluence?
I'm not able to hear Swami. Can you talk about what?
Fluence. The recent conversation with Fluence where they found that our product was actually... That's not a question I passed on to Anu. She answered a different question altogether.
Correct. So Anu, you know, we should talk about Fluence, where they actually came back to us after evaluating other products and said that our product was far better, the product market fit. I think Swami wanted to speak about that.
Yes. Dita, you take it.
Okay. Sure. If you can hear me, okay. So, this is specifically in the European market. We had a partner 4 or 5 years ago who actually was retailing both our product as well as some other third-party products as well in the marketplace. This year, this partner came back to us and said that they wanted to work with us far more seriously. They actually felt that the other products in the market were not as good, falling behind, and they felt that Iris was doing the Iris Carbon product, I'm so sorry, was doing was much better, especially given the changing complexity of the mandate. You know, where things like text blocks need to be tagged, etc. And they said that Carbon clearly seems to be a much better product, and we'd like to take this as the main product out. We'd like to position this to our leadership as the main product that we'd like to take out into market. So I think that is the piece that I'm not referring to.
So basically, Rohit, the point I'm trying to make here is the following. Since we operate in multiple geographies, we have had to work with different kinds of mandates. So Carbon has had to deal with multitude of situations. So if you throw a new situation at us, we probably have seen it before in another country. Therefore, our preparedness for any change in the mandate, by virtue of being in so many countries, is actually much better than people in single markets within just one uniform market. So EU is one uniform market. So if you basically are selling Carbon just in EU, well, that's all that you have. But if you're selling Carbon in EU, in India, in South Africa, and several other markets around the world, you've been thrown different problems from different markets, and therefore you're able to prepare for a new mandate change or a complexity in the mandate much more easily than anybody else. So this conversation that we had with our partner was a huge vindication of our strategy of going to multiple markets. That's what I want to mention to you.
So it's very interesting to hear. So the revenue from Fluence has started coming, or is it...
Not yet. No. It's still early. There is a boy likes girl. It still doesn't mean they're getting married.
Okay, understood. So could we understand, I believe that you mentioned we hired a new sales officer who has focused on the SaaS space in the past. So it would be great if you can hear from him on the strategy for SaaS going forward, because I understand the competition sells sort of a basket solution and not just one particular piece. So to get the customer to shift from one to another, or one company to another, preferably to Iris, is a more difficult task, is what I understood. So how do we, in absence of a mandate, how do we win more clients and how do we grow, create, is something that would be great to hear. Because I believe from the past you mentioned that pricing is not something we grow on, but we'll rather grow on volumes. So that'll be...
So before I get Servo in, maybe Dita, can you introduce Servo so that Servo can then take the question, please?
Sure. So just to hand it over to him so we can talk a little bit more. If you remember on the last call, we talked about two things. One was establishing product market fit, and the second was strengthening the sales and marketing infrastructure. So product market fit point of view, companies from a business management perspective, we have the last and version 1.0, we had got feedback incorporated it, and you know, release 2.0. So it's that we have done with every other opportunity, it's the same thing that we're doing on the disclosure management side. So on the product side, we're kind of like happy to say that each passing release and each passing user feedback, you know, we have established further and further fitness of product, if I can put it like that.
Deepta, can you introduce Servo in terms of his background? I mean, that's the whole objective.
Oh, certainly. On the sales and marketing side, we've actually hired in from a sales leadership point of view, Servo. He's on the call with us today. He's heading sales and marketing, basically growth for Iris Carbon. And he comes in from a background of SaaS sales. He was earlier with a company called HiRadius, and I think he'll be able to talk to it much more. Where he has been a part of the ramp up and scale up journey. If I have it correctly, HiRadius is now at about a $250 million ARR. But he's been through much of the scale up journey of HiRadius, and Servo's been with us now close to 3 months. I now started setting the entire sales and marketing pieces in order for us to be able to take Carbon out at scale in the market. And I think Servo is on the call, so Servo, if you can introduce yourself, please.
Yep. Thank you so much, Deepta, and hi Rohit, and hi everyone. So as Deepta mentioned, I'm coming from a background of SaaS sales, selling to the office of the CFO, and helped through the growth journey from a 10 to a $250 million sale, right? So I guess to replicate something similar here at Iris Carbon, selling to the office of the CFO. In terms of answering your questions, Rohit, very specifically, I think our objective is to move towards a non-mandate sales, especially with the disclosure management. So we are not going to be focused necessarily on mandate business. Yes, we will continue to do what we are doing, but the idea is to position ourselves where we show value for the disclosure management product and Iris Carbon as a whole. That's number one. The second is, I would say there's an awareness that needs to be created. So Iris Carbon has a great product, but in the North America geography, and to some extent in Europe, there is more awareness that needs to be created. So we're focusing on creating that awareness at the same time, directly as well as via our partners, so that we're able to generate more interest and visibility within the market. So good product plus awareness hopefully should lead to an increase in sales. And I'll pause on that. Does that answer your question, Rohit?
No, yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you for answering that so nicely. But a little more detail would help in the context, and my understanding is the product, at least the Iris Carbon, sells at, let's say, $5,000 to $10,000 per year. And in that context, my understanding is that, so at least because we're selling to the office of the CFO, right? They just want to get the work done, and a saving of, let's say, $1,000 to $2,000 won't cut it, because to relearn the whole thing for the whole office, it becomes a little painful for $1,000 to $2,000 in an entire year saving. So in that context, correct, how do we go about converting? I mean, if it was a tech adoption or a sale, something like that, it might have been different. Or if the saving was an order of magnitude higher, then it would have been different. But in this context, is it not difficult to convert people from the office of the CFO who might not necessarily be very tech savvy to switch from one product to the other? So in that context, how do we grow is where I'm coming from.
Yeah, that's a great question, Rohit. So I think the way we have traditionally sold, I think we have pivoted a little bit off late, where we are trying to understand the overall value, like you rightly called out. What we have observed is the value is a lot higher that we are delivering or saving to our potential clients. And as we quantify the value to them, they are able to position it better internally. To add to that, I would also say that price or cost is one of the factors that customers or prospects are looking for change. what we are trying to identify is the other factors which is causing that pain. So what we, as in when we understand the reason, so in some cases, I'll give you a small example. One of our competitors, a big one, is not using Microsoft Word, Excel, etc. as their baseline product to work off the disclosure management solution. We are positioning ourselves as you can continue to work using your traditional tools like Microsoft Word and Excel and not having to move out of them. That gives them a lot more comfort. So there are different things that we are doing, in short, understanding their pain points and then positioning ourselves accordingly to the situation. May or may not lead to, you know, the dollar delta. Some of them are not looking at, like you said, the dollar value savings, but some of them, a lot of them are looking at an ROI or a cost savings, and we are trying to quantify that as much as possible, which can add up to a significant number. That
is definitely helpful. I mean, you're talking about ease of use and convenience, which so there is time value as well, which will be very helpful for sure. And so just one last question. So in terms of if the strategy is working out or not, the best indicator for us to track, let's say over the next 2-3 years, would be the create ARR number. Would that be right in thinking to see if the strategy is working going forward?
Absolutely. I would call that a lagging indicator, an output metric that you'd like to measure. A leading indicator probably would be growth in pipeline as you move along. So we measure both the leading or input metric as well as the lagging, and we'll get to know whether strategies are working or not, and we'll make changes as and when needed.
Understood. No, fair enough. I don't think we'll be privy to the leading indicator for confidentiality purpose perhaps, so I'll look forward to seeing the lagging indicator move up quite heavily going forward. Thank you so much for your answers, the management. And once again, congratulations to everybody for the 100 crore achievement. Really happy for you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Bhattar, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm audible, right?
So you're audible, but you're sounding muffled. So if you're using the speaker mode, may we request to use the handset mode, please?
Sure. Okay. Firstly, congratulations on a fantastic set of numbers. I think everyone, you know, did highlight that, right? I had, you know, a couple of questions, right? One is, you know, on the product ID, right, which does the automated, you know, red reporting, right? Just wanted to understand the sort of, you know, revenue model here. Like, do we, you know, like invoice our clients, implementation plus, you know, pay per usage type of model? You know, and why I'm asking this is, you know, like, we all know the, you know, reporting requirements for banks, financial institutions are growing, you know, and will continue to grow exponentially. So we're just trying to, you know, link if, you know, there's a sort of linear, you know, relationship here.
Balu, I got kicked out of the call for a few minutes. I don't know why. So since I didn't hear the full question, I'll let you take it.
I can take the question. Thank you for asking this. IDEAL is a very important and interesting product in the IRIS portfolio. So we do work with more than one, you know, one model for invoicing. One, of course, when we started out with IDEAL, which is primarily aimed at the BFSI sector, and which typically handles large volumes of data and push the data after doing a set of validations automatically into the regulators' collection platform. So we initially started off with a licensing and AMC model, and that continues.
After call current Australia ATL number.
Hello. I hope you can hear me. So I was saying that we initially started with the licensing and AMC model, which also is in vogue at this point of time and it continues with many of our customers. But we have also have an offer, a subscription model, where people pay as a subscription on an annual basis. And we have, I would say maybe, you know, 30-40% of clients are using the subscription model. So both are in vogue. And we do have it on-prem at this point of time, especially in India and Mauritius, where we are in operations. In South Africa, we have also started to offer this product on the cloud as well. So this is a product where we feel there's a lot of potential. Of course, the market is very competitive in Europe, especially where XBRL mandates came in quite some time back. But in other countries, it is just opening up. That's what I would say.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I had a follow-up question, on the consumer business, right? Now, with all this, data that is getting reported to the regulators, and the sort of standardization sort of coming in, right? Again, the expectation would be that, regulators start looking at, all this data for analytics and, even for their policy implementations, right? Now or maybe even in the future. Regulators are a sort of, very niche client category that, we have. Are we seeing that sort of a, discussions, where they are looking at, help on, understanding and making sense out of all the data, analytics and all of that? Or is it too early for that?
See, we already have products in the consumer category. For example, if you see our flagship product for the banking system for RBI, something called Silk, which basically is analyzing the filings made by banks to the RBI, and we help RBI make sense of it and do things. So yes, so with every customer, depending on the scope of the implementation of the Collect platform, there's also an analytics platform. So when you see the revenues in the case of consume, a lot of it comes actually from implementation of solutions like that. So we've done something on those lines in Dubai. We've done something on similar lines in Oman. So it's increasingly, you're absolutely right, and it's a great question for that. Increasingly, regulators are looking at how to use the data better and also looking at how to use the data along with other data. So Balu, you want to mention something about the Dubai opportunity that we kept, the Dubai delivery we did?
So we understand more for our customer, which is Abu Dhabi Stock Exchange. The Content Mall is a product in which whatever data they collect from companies, essentially financial data, can be further repackaged into data APIs and be consumed by the exchange customers. This is one of the offerings that we have in the consumer space. But outside that, we also do normal analytics. We have done that for central banks as well. So it is many times bundled along with our overall SupTech offering, which includes collection and analytics.
Thank you. Thanks. And is the space as competitive as the other businesses? I mean, like I mentioned, given our niche client, segment here, is the segment as competitive or we have an advantage there?
I think some regulators see this as a completely different thing altogether. Some regulators see it in combination with the platform that we develop for them. So I think there's no uniform answer. There is competition, but then there's no competition. So it's up to us. So we try to talk to our regulators, customers, and basically say, you can do this. Sometimes they bite, sometimes they don't bite. I think more often than not, until now, they've not bitten. But I think increasingly we see a trend where people are saying, data to maine itna collect kar diya, I've already collected so much data, what can I do with it? And what other data streams can I have talking to it? So yeah, I don't think there's a very clear-cut answer as to how competitive it is. But our strengths, by virtue of what we have, are well known, and therefore we are able to get customers within that. We've not really focused on it to the extent that we should, except the focus that we do on this one is at the time of the tender itself, where we try to tell them what all they can do with it. So it's not being done as a separate entity. In the case of, as Balu said, the Dubai thing, for example, we implemented the platform several years ago. It's only now that they've started talking about how to leverage the data. So I think to each his own. So it's competitive, but not competitive, but we are in a good spot. We are in a good space.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, sir, for the detailed answer.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Yash Naik from Investor. Please go ahead.
Yash Naik is last one.
Light on how to grow our business in the consumer segment, considering it is our highest margin segment. So can we see in next 4 to 5 years?
Mr. Naik, your line was not audible at the start. So could you please repeat your question?
Hello, am I audible now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Could you shed some light on how to grow our consumer segment, considering it is our highest margin segment? So can we see the significant growth in the top line also going forward in this segment? Hello?
Swami, will you be able to take this question? It's about consumer sector.
Line for Mr. Swaminathan is dropped. I'm connecting him back.
Okay. So maybe we can come back to this question tonight.
I've just connected him. Just give me a moment. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm back.
So please, can you repeat your question?
Yeah, yeah. So could you share some light on the consumer segment? It is highest margin segment. So going forward, could we see some growth in the top line also in future next 4 to 5 years in that segment?
I think the consumer segment is something that we're going to invest in now. That see, when you don't have money, you have to choose where you invest. You invest in collect and create. Now that we are slightly better off, we will invest increasingly in the consumer segment, and we see some significant possibilities there. How fast will it go? What all will it grow? See, the consumer segment has other possibilities. We can always offer collect the data for free in return for customers buying carbon. We can offer data for free for people buying our GST solutions. So consumer segment can also be a marketing tool to acquire customers. Consumer segment can also be a revenue generating business for customers, for us. So how we use it is a function of many different factors. The reason we've not shut down the consumer segment all these years is because it's been very, very valuable in terms of helping us acquire customers by using the data from the consumer segment as a marketing tool. But you're absolutely right. If we invest in it, we will be able to grow it much bigger. And that's certainly one of the objectives in the years ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And mainly the IDS Peridot, is the revenue coming from that software or like application, or it is just for the marketing?
See, Peridot is completely free. Peridot is completely free. Therefore, there are no revenues from Peridot. But having said that, today, because we are a GST, we are able to offer data APIs to customers, data APIs to lenders, for example. And there are, we have tied up with a few lenders. Gautam, are you there on the call?
Hello?
Yes, Swami. I'm there.
Gautam, can you talk about how we are leveraging data APIs?
Yeah. So the Peridot app is completely free, but it actually gives the visibility to end users about the potential of data that it carries. So we've been using this data APIs and providing to intermediary ERP platforms as well as some of the lenders to use both consent and non-consent based data for various KYC purposes, for credit distancing monitoring purposes.
Yeah, helpful. Thank you. And yeah, I have one regarding the ESG mandate. So are there any updates on that ESG mandate thing? Hello?
If you want to answer that on the ESG mandate?
Hello? Am I audible?
Yeah, audible. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. It's about the ESG mandate.
The ESG mandate, there's a question on ESG mandate, and how is it shaping up?
Okay. So the first region or geography where it is rolling out is Europe. Then companies in a phased manner, we'll start reporting sustainability reports. It's going to kick in from next year, and it will extend after that. It's going a little bit slower, but there are still pockets in the U.S. certain states that are also pushing ahead, for example, like California, pushing ahead of the other states. So we expect that the ESG mandates in the U.S. will also start rolling out in local business in a couple of years. But right now, for us, immediately, we see Europe as an interesting market where we will start rolling out our solution and making it available for ESG reporting as well.
Yeah, okay. Just to clarify one thing, currently there is no revenue coming out from the ESG vendor, right? Am I correct on this?
Yes, you're right. There is no revenue coming specifically out of an ESG offering.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next
question. I do want to apologize for constantly getting bounced over a call. I don't know why it's happening. I'm a brand new airport where, for some reason, the call keeps dropping. So my deepest apologies to everybody. It's inconvenienced by my being bounced over the call so often.
So the next question is from the line of Deepak Poddar from Sapphire Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm audible, sir.
Yes, you are.
Okay, sir, many congratulations for a good set of numbers. So first of all, I just wanted to understand what's the our annual...
Deepak, can you speak louder? You started, when you said, are you my audible? You're very audible. After that, you become completely inaudible because you're too soft. Much better. But please speak into the mic because I lost you completely.
Yes. So I was just trying to understand in terms of your R&D spend, what's the annual spend that we need to do and how much we capitalize and what would be a capitalized amount as in our books as of now?
So the nature of our business is that R&D is a continuous spend. And if you take a look at Carbon, there's always constant improvements happening. There are constant product upgrades happening. And there is constant R&D happening in terms of what the next release should contain. Deepta, you want to take the question on how we approach R&D in the context of Carbon?
Sure. I'm not sure if my voice is clear. And if it is not, I'll just please request either Bali or Anu to take it. But in short, there is continuous product enhancements, both for newer modules, such as our disclosure management module, the ESG module, etc., as well as for enhancements in functionalities, for example, bringing in more, let's say, GenAI into the product, or bringing in more analytics capabilities into the product. So all of these become a part of continuous R&D investment in both keeping the product current and also taking it ahead of competition.
Yeah, so I was just trying to understand what is in rupees crores, what is the spend that we did in last year, FY24?
See, let me come in here, Deepta. So we do have a capitalization, stream, which will be less than the money we spend in R&D, because certain conditions have to be met before we capitalize. So the capitalization would be about, 2.3 to 2.4 crores for this year. But we do spend the money a little more than that, because some of these, activities might not fit in for capitalization.
And how much was the money spent in FY24 in R&D?
FY24 R&D, on the whole, I wouldn't like to give a number, but I would say capitalization would be about 2.3, 2.4 crores.
Okay, and what would be total amount sitting in your balance sheet, the capitalized amount?
So the intangible assets, which includes, which are capitalized and which are in process, would be about 4 crores.
Would be about 4 crores, fair enough, I got it. And my second question is on your sustainability. I mean, this quarter we saw a good jump in quarter-on-quarter revenue and which also led to better leverage for our company and delivered higher EBITDA margin. So how sustainable is this kind of EBITDA margin and what sort of growth we are looking at for FY25?
We don't make any forward-looking statements, but the rest of it I'll let Balu handle.
Come again, you are not audible, sir.
That's because I'm at the airport. Before I get to the question that you asked, I want to add one more thing here. You know, there are different people in the company with different skill sets. For a company like us, don't look at R&D spend as something that happens in isolation. R&D spend for a company like us is largely salaries. R&D spend in many other companies, they have a separate division, they have a separate R&D lab. That's not really how it works here. So we currently have, for example, a gentleman working on one product who is basically going to figure out how to use LLM for different products. Now, will that lead to something in Carbon? Will it lead to something in GST? Will it lead to something elsewhere? Well, we're all holding our breath in terms of what could actually happen. So please don't look at R&D as a complete, some separate division that we actually have maintained with a bunch of separate people. R&D is a continuous process for every product. So which is why estimating the R&D expenditure separately is a hazardous task. Now to come back to your question about looking forward for FY25, we don't make any forward-looking statements at all. So I cannot answer that question about FY25. Nor can any of us.
Okay, fair enough. Are we seeing the northward direction on a going forward basis? I mean, without giving any kind of objective numbers, subjectively, if you can define something, that would be helpful.
I don't make any going forward statements of any kind under any circumstances. I can only tell you that we can only look back and basically say, what have we done? As a company, we are constantly striving to get the maximum bang for the buck. We are constantly striving to invest in ways that gives us the best possible returns. and we are constantly trying to allocate capital depending on where we think the best returns are. Now, what will we do going forward? Well, I think every quarter when we come up with something, we will actually see it. We don't make any forward-looking statements as a matter of policy in this company.
Fair enough. That's fair. And just one last thing, in terms of tax rate, what is the tax rate we are looking at?
Tax rate,
yeah.
Yeah, we are 25-26% marginal tax rate, but we do have some MAT credit available because we were incurring losses earlier and we were paying the taxes on the book profits. Mm-hmm. And we have recognized the deferred tax on the MAT credits this year. So effective tax rate would be around 10-12%.
And this will continue, this effective tax, or will normalize to 25-26%?
Yeah, a little bit. For this year, I expect it to continue.
The reduced tax rate.
Please.
Okay, fair enough. All the very best, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Bansali from Parami Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. So our biggest competitor in the U.S., they spend around $150 billion annually on research and development. And still, you know, we have been able to compete quite well. So what has helped us to compete with them in the last few years? And in general, how do you see the competitive intensity going forward in different regions?
I think it's a great question. As I mentioned to you, is something that's not really... I think it's a complete... we don't really account for R&D separately to the fullest extent of R&D. It's a continuous improvement process that actually happens, unlike Workiva. And so I think there are differences in accounting treatment of R&D. That's what we need to know. Secondly, the reason why we are constantly ahead is because we have a motivated team. You know, I don't know which car company. I think Aegis or Hertz used to say that we try harder. So when you have a motivated team working on multiple countries, pulling ideas from multiple countries and bringing it all together onto one platform, you'll actually see constant improvement of the product and constant R&D happening. As I said, you do what's appropriate. So what applies to South Africa is different from what applies to India. What applies to India is very different from what applies in Singapore. So the fact that we are in so many countries automatically changes the way we approach product development, changes the way we do product deployment. And today, for example, every product that we have, whether it be Carbon, Rifile, or Ideal, are products that allow us the comfort of going global. Even if we take a look at GST, our e-invoice experience that we have from India, while the product may not be directly relevant for Malaysia, we are now taking the product to Malaysia and we're getting some piece of retraction there. So I think R&D is something that's happened in the marketplace. It's not something that happens in a lab. If you're constantly close to your customers, if you have your ear to a customer, then the customers tell you what is required, what the new things are. So, for example, I mean, the example that Deepta gave earlier, does it require a huge amount of brains to know that the whole world works in Microsoft and knowing that can be a differentiating factor in case of Carbon? It doesn't require a genius to do that because the whole world works in Microsoft. But Workiva, being a dominant player and a big player, said we're not going to work with Microsoft. We're going to work with the existing, they have their own flavor of work. That's the way they've done it. But could they tomorrow move to a word-based environment? Absolutely possible. So, but I think the fact that we work close to our customers and we're constantly talking to customers gives us the comfort to stay ahead of the curve. And I don't know how many people have actually seen this. Just like Gartner looks at services, there's a company called G2, which looks at products. And on G2 rankings, we've consistently scored ahead of everybody in the world. Anu, you want to talk about the G2 rankings for a second?
Sure. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, you are. Focus on your G2.
Yep. So G2 is an online rating platform where companies, customers can give reviews. And G2 also publishes from time to time like a grid around the satisfaction and the performance of various products. So if you see, Iris Carbon has been ranking high on customer satisfaction, and that has been consistently there. So as an organization, I kind of said we are a very listening organization. We speak to customers very regularly. We get feedback from customers. That's how we are able to keep our products always up to date, and also we gear up for all future requirements. So this is one of the key reasons how we are able to maintain a consistent ranking in terms of high customer satisfaction on the grid. And of course, comparing to some of the key competitors, if you see on some of the parameters from a product perspective, we are in fact ranking higher than some of the bigger competition which exists in the market. So that is very, very promising and nice to see as well.
I would actually request every one of you who wants to know more about this thing to actually visit G2 and look at Iris comparison with other products. It will be a revelation, I promise you.
Sure. And how much was the recurring revenues for the entire year? If you could just give that number.
Balu?
Recurring revenue for the whole of the year, FY24, would be around 62 to 62.5 crores.
62 crore. Okay. And the same figure for FY23 was what, sir?
There have been about 57, roughly.
57. Got it. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreyansh Ajmera from Retail Investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you are.
Sir, first of all, congratulations for our great set of numbers. I had a couple of questions. So, in terms, this is specific to Iris Carbon. So, how do we place ourselves against bigger companies like, for example, Workiva in America and Technology in Europe? Like, what specific sort of target market that we are targeting? Like, what kind of companies that we are targeting? For example, some of these competitors have been able to onboard like some of these multi-billion-dollar organizations. So are we targeting those, or are we targeting like somewhat smaller organizations? How does our target market basically differ from theirs basically? Hello.
Yep. So I'll take that question. This is Servo. So I think historically is. Workiva and some of the other competitors, like you mentioned, have been focused mainly on the enterprise market. So over $1 billion in revenue, kind of client time. Our target historically has been the mid-market and SMB segment. So anything under $1 billion where we have been targeting. Now, having said that, we do have quite a few customers who are also enterprise customers over in revenue. So we've never differentiated necessarily on the basis of what the revenue size of our customers or prospects are. Moving forward, I think we will also start focusing. We were preparing the product for the enterprise customers, especially from a disclosure management point of view. Moving forward, we will continue our focus on the mid and SMB segment, but also start entering more and more proactively into the enterprise segment, both in North America as well as Europe.
Okay. And what is our USP, if you would say, or more compared to these organizations? For example, I believe their enterprise is their selling point, right? They can cover like 5-6 departments aside from just the CFO's department. I'm sorry. So, what is our selling point basically? Let's say we are good. One is our price, I'm assuming. I have seen the G2 reviews, that's why I'm doing that. So, if you could answer that.
No, so I think differentiator, price is one factor, like you rightly called out. But I don't think we are differentiating just alone on the basis of price. I think we have a fantastic product. We need to create more awareness and differentiate based on what value we are adding to our prospects or our customer base. We need to do a more effective job over there and an ROI-based sale, quantifying that value for them. You know, there might have been more features, functionality in some of our competitor products, but that does not mean that is what the client needs. It's really solving a pain point or problem for them. We are focused on solving the problem end-to-end for our client. And I think our service, customer's service, after sales service has been phenomenal. So that's been a big differentiator. So a lot of word of mouth and reference is what we also focus on.
Okay. And Lisa, you want to add to this? One second. Lisa, you want to add to this?
I think Servo more or less said it. I think pricing is one of it, not all of it. I think we have superb customer experience for the quality of service and the integrated bundle service that we offer. And of course, the product functionalities and the speed of release, which I think Anand said is listening, I think all of that makes for a comprehensive package. So I think, like Servo said, now it's just about making sure that we increase the awareness and get the cadence of getting in front of the right audiences in the market. So that combination is what is going to make the difference.
What would you say our total addressable market is for Iris Carbon in terms of global, if you could have, if you would have a number for me?
So go.
Okay. I would say this addressable market for Iris Carbon is roughly in the range of $10 to $15 billion. So we are probably scratching the surface right now. Workiva estimates it to be a little higher, but I think from our point of view, we think it should be somewhere around this range.
So $10 to $15 billion, basically we are banking on the fact that we will keep adding more and more functionalities to our product, because that's how this number will grow so high, right?
Not really, not really. See, the point is that also multi, we take a look at carbon, it's used for different kinds of reporting in different parts of the world. And what Servo said earlier, moving away from the mandate. So whether you add features or not, there is already a core product which can be sold to people. We are able to wean away customers from our competitors at this point in time quite successfully. So revenues will grow. For revenues to grow, you don't necessarily need to add more and more features. Sure, we will keep adding on new features, but the sales does not depend only on adding new features. We already have a viable product that is currently accepted in the market.
And this is regarding Collect. Based on our November 23 conference call, we have all expanded a lot in Africa. I can see that from your presentation as well. So how do you see the current RFP pipeline for Collect for the coming year?
See, RFP pipeline, I don't know much about, because one fine day a regulator wakes up, issues an RFP and something actually happens. But what I can say is increasingly RFPs are being issued, and just because RFPs are being issued doesn't mean we will win them. We don't win every single one of them. As I said, regulators are waking up to the need to move such platforms, and increasingly it's happening. So as I said, am I prepared to hazard a guess in terms of how many RFPs will be issued this year? I have no idea. Do I have one hazard against in terms of what the value of those RFPs will be? I don't have any idea at this point in time. What I do know is that more and more regulators are waking up, and even surprisingly, regulators we did not expect are waking up and started talking to people and saying, can I start looking at this? And there are no numbers I can offer you if that's what you're looking for.
So follow up to this, what is our win rate in terms of RFP, and which market specifically we are focusing on for Collect?
So if you take a look at the win rate, again, that's going to be a number that's difficult to come up with. I'll tell you why. Before COVID, we were winning 55% of the bids that we were putting out. After COVID, it's only now that things are picking up. We still have a very small number to go by. So if you have two people in the room and one person leaves, it will look like 50% of the people are actually left. Which, as you know, that it's very hazardous to apply percentages when the number of VCs is very, very small, and that's where we are. Maybe in about a year or 2 years' time. So when I gave numbers about 55% wins pre-COVID, that was over a 10-year period. But therefore, and right now, post-COVID, there are very few that have actually happened. Therefore, it's difficult to come up with the number of percentage of wins. As I said, 5 years from now, I'll give percentage of wins. It will be a meaningful number. Today, the percentage does not make any sense for anybody at this point in time. And which markets are we tracking? There are 70 countries in the world that have adopted XBRL for electronic filing, whatever. And which means there are 120 countries that have not done that. Every one of those countries is a potential market. I did not expect, for example, that Bhutan would be an adopter as they are at this point in time. And it's surprising the kind of countries that are actually getting into it. I see some traction in Africa. I see some traction in Asia as well. So this is why you see us spending more and more time in Africa. But nothing significant to report at this point in time. For example, we got some Nigerian clients for bank reporting, even though Nigerian Central Bank is still not ready with the reporting platform. So each country is moving at its own pace, but we're reasonably confident that of the 52 countries in Africa, 54 countries in Africa, we expect something to happen going forward now that South Africa and Mauritius have examples to show. So Africa is certainly an area where we are concentrating. Also, you may have seen that the CAG of India, the Comptroller Auditor General, has issued a report about 2 years ago talking about data standards and how governments in India, state governments and government departments should follow data standards. We see that as a possible, as possibly creating opportunities for us going forward. We don't know where the opportunities will come. We are trying, we're knocking on doors, we're talking to people and basically sensitizing them to the CAG report as well. So where will the growth come from? I'm not being difficult, I just don't know. You know, I know which doors I'm knocking on, but if I keep start talking about which doors I'm knocking on, the next step is why did they not do it? What, who won, who did not win? It's a concept that needs to be sold. Structured reporting is a completely new concept. And we are fighting against PDF-based reporting and document-based, paper-based reporting. So we are optimistic, we are confident, but the focus, as I said, is on underserved areas like Africa and many other regulators even in a country like India.
Thanks a lot. Another question, for just a small follow-up question to this is, from Collect, we receive primarily the project-based revenue. Do we envisage this revenue to convert into annual recurring revenue in the future?
It's not only project-based revenue. There's also product-based revenue. There's also a licensing revenue because iFile is sold along with the Collect platform. Are we trying to move it to an annuity-based model? Yes, we are. But are people willing to do that? The answer is no so far, except for Mauritius. So the Mauritius model gives us hope that regulators across the world will start looking at it. So we are optimistic it will happen, but I think it's a fantastic question. We are trying to move it to an annuity-based model going forward.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Just a small question, that's all I have. So we had a few months back, we had gotten the approval for raising our equity capital. So do we have any plans to raise funds in the coming year?
So if I'm very happy to send you a proposal for 25 crores, if you want to give it to me, I'm very happy to take it from you. As a company, we certainly, while we have 16 crores in the bank, we certainly want to add to the war chest to be able to mount a meaningful assault on the markets that we want to get into. We did not raise money earlier because of the way, you know, I don't think many people still today have an understanding of our business like you do. I mean, the people on the call have a good understanding of our business, but the majority of people still don't. And I think until such time as that happens, raising capital is difficult. We raised the office capital also because we, at that time, were also looking at ESOP. We also did it because we wanted to be prepared in case suddenly some offer came to us from investors, inquiry came to us from investors who wanted to put in money. I'm not saying we are actively in the market looking for money, but I'm also not saying that we are not actively in the market looking for money. We need resources to grow to the next level. With the 16 crores in the bank, I think the equation changes. We have enough to kickstart our activities. Is it enough? I don't think so. How much more do we need? Do you have some idea? So the answer is yes and no. Complicated answer. You will think I'm being difficult. I'm not being difficult. I'm just being truthful.
Thank you. Sir, are we looking at debt instead of equity?
No, absolutely no. We will not look at debt. We're not interested in debt. There have been people who come to us with offers of debt. We will not look at debt.
Thanks a lot, sir. That's all from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mitesh Mehta from Investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you once again. I have a few questions. One is a promoter stake is reducing. That is just a factor of ESOPs, or is from our promoters actively reducing their stake?
I urge you to take a look at the filings. You will not find promoters actively reducing their holdings. You can look. Please look at the filings. Please look at the filings. You will have the answer.
Okay. My second question is we have some 16-odd crores cash balance, and we have some 5 to 6 crores short-term borrowings. So is there any specific reasons why borrowings are kept, or companies increasing war chest for some inorganic opportunities?
There is no inorganic opportunity of any kind that we are considering at this point in time. Under the provisions of the bank limit that we have from ICICI, we are required to utilize something, otherwise we end up paying a hefty commitment fee. So some utilization actually happens on the lines that we have from ICICI Bank.
Okay. And my last question is pertaining to client mining. Like, do we have an active team because we have a list of marquee clients? So, we have a specific team working on client mining?
I think everybody in sales is looking to cross-sell. So, we have a number of MCA customers who are also GST customers. A number of GST customers also are also MCA customers. And logically, when we have a new offering, we first go to our existing customers. So, is there a separate team for it? No, there's no separate team for it. But cross-selling is an extremely important thing. And even in the context of Europe, as Sarvo will tell you, Sarvo, you want to take this question and add to how we are trying to get deep into clients, especially with the non-mandate like stuff?
Okay. Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Okay.
Sarvo, you had a question. Sarvo, could you answer the question?
No. No, I think it's good, but if you want, I can elaborate a little.
Please elaborate.
Sure. So I think the idea is to get into, so we have an existing customer base across the board to whom we can not just upsell, which basically means more more of the same product, but we can also cross-sell. So we've got multiple products across the board that we can sell to them. What we can also do is, these are large corporates which are globally present and have multiple subsidiary or child organizations, if you want to think of it that way. The objective there is to bring in not just the product, but multiple products across the board. So that's one of the strategies we're looking at to make footprint within our existing customer base.
Okay.
Does that answer the question? Yeah.
Yeah, and can I request, like, if management thinks, like, we develop a special team for client mining, because the kind of marquee clients the company has, like we see a lot of potential in like increasing per client billing.
So when you say client mining, I'm not sure if I understood that right. Can you elaborate? What do you mean by client?
Cross-selling products as well as services.
No, absolutely.
Sure, I think it's a good suggestion. We will certainly see what will be done. Thank you. I think it's a great solution. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ketan Atavle from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers. I wanted to know if our Q4 margin of 21% is sustainable on an annual basis.
Balu, you want to take that?
Okay, traditionally, you know, you would have seen that our Q4 margins are a little more than the, you know, other quarter margins. Having said that, I think it depends on the overall volume growth. The volume growth is, you know, robust. I don't see any reason why the margins should be less than our annual margins. Quarterly margins you should not see so much, but there are certain quarters where, you know, there is higher volumes happening in certain parts of the business. But overall, the margins are very closely linked to the overall volumes or overall growth in the top.
Okay, got it. So basically, you are saying
I just want to mention that one is the EBITDA margin. At the PBT level, we do have some overheads, but overheads are growing at a much lower rate compared to the overall revenues. So that also is something which looks quite promising. So the PBT level, you would see that the PBT doubled while EBITDA went up by 45%. So that leverage still exists for some more time.
Okay, got it. And on the employee cost, how much increase do we expect generally year on year?
How much do we expect?
Due to increments or hiring, how much increase do we expect year on year?
Okay. So it is hard to put a number because different businesses have different requirements. For example, in the SaaS business, we definitely want to increase our sales and marketing presence and make sure that we are covered our markets well in terms of both inside sales and some feet on the street. Having said that, we have grown our expenses, employee expenses, about 28 to 30% over the last couple of years, which I think is a fairly high number, high percentage. Okay, so business as usual case, I don't see the growth in employee cost going up above these levels.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. S. Swaminathan for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for participating. I'm sorry we went 11 minutes over time. I hope all your questions are answered. Thank you all for your support. And I just want you to know that our pride in the company is driven by the financial performance of the company and not the stock performance of the company. However, we are mindful of returns to shareholders, and therefore we are mindful of our obligation to do the best that we can to ensure that our financial performance improves going forward, improves quarter on quarter. But it's not a company that you should look at quarter on quarter. Take all this, look at it in the context of the year, because quarter on quarter will be very misleading numbers, literally. So I am grateful to you for participating in this conference call, and keep your suggestions coming. Several people sent me a question a little while, some time ago, asking why we are not paying dividend. We are not paying dividend because we need to raise capital, we need to conserve resources. We need to conserve resources, and dividend paying is not the most optimal way to reward shareholders. I think the day we have enough cash, we end up doing a buyback as opposed to paying dividend. We don't have enough cash right now to do things like that. That's the approach we're actually going to take. So if you are looking at a company that pays you dividend quarter on quarter, we are not the company for you. This is not our year on year. This one, we are not the company for you, because that's not the approach we're actually going to take. And as far as we are concerned, the money that we have right now needs to be conserved for accelerating our growth of our carbon products and other products as well. So I want you to understand that. Keep your questions coming. We may not answer certain questions from time to time. For some reason, we could be in a silence period where some people keep reminding us of the questions. But to be aware of the silence period, and we really won't take any questions. And we will answer it at meetings like this. So once again, thank you. I want to thank all my colleagues. We do have my colleagues in response to, so we complete 20 years of business this year. So we're actually going to be celebrating with all of our colleagues this Saturday when we're going to talk about, growth going forward, etc. We're also calling our auditors, our internal auditors, our suppliers, our vendors, all of our partners who are taking the company this far. But all of this can happen only with the support of shareholders. So to each one of you, I'm deeply grateful. Bali is deeply grateful. We are deeply grateful. Thomas has been grateful. So please, thank you. Keep it coming. And we will continue to do the best we can to ensure that everyone is suitable. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of IRIS Business Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.